There's no such thing as a bad question. How many times have we heard that said? I've heard that so often throughout my life, and I hadn't really given it a whole lot of thought until I came to a verse in Ecclesiastes a few weeks ago as I was reading through the book, preparing for something else. And this passage in Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and verse 10, and for whatever reason, it just kind of stuck in my mind, this common saying, there's no such thing as a bad question. And what I realized is what the preacher says is that's completely wrong. There are bad questions. And he said, we're going to talk about one of them. And so this is what he says in Ecclesiastes 7 and verse 10. Say not, why were the former days better than these? For it is not from wisdom that you ask this. That's the nice way of saying it. What he's saying is it is foolish to ask this. It's a bad question to think, why were the former days better than these? It's interesting you think about that idea of having bad questions or good questions. And I think primarily we say that, or that's a common saying, because we're worried that people are going to be afraid to speak up. That they're going to not want to participate in conversation and say, we say, oh, there's no bad questions, just ask whatever. Or we're worried that people aren't going to be clear about something. And really, as I thought about this some more, I realized there really aren't bad questions when it comes to ignorance. When we don't know something or something is not clear to us and we want the information and we sincerely want knowledge, then asking those questions is not bad. It is not wrong. They aren't questions that shouldn't be asked. In fact, we should speak up when something isn't clear, when something doesn't make sense. And I think for the most part, that's typically what we mean when we say that phrase, there's no such thing as a bad question. But at the same time, maybe it gives us the wrong idea and we think there aren't any bad questions when in fact there are bad questions. Some questions are bad because they seek to justify our actions or our beliefs. Think about that lawyer who, after Jesus said, you love the Lord your God with all your heart, your soul, your mind, and your strength, and love your neighbor as yourself, he says, well, who is my neighbor? Right, that's a bad question. Now, it gave Jesus an opportunity to answer it and say some things that needed to be heard, but really he's just seeking to justify himself in the eyes of others. Or sometimes it's just purposely to escape reality. Maybe think of Pilate and a few of the things he says, but you remember that one phrase, what is truth? Right, just kind of dismissing the situation. Being happy in his ignorance, which is different than being ignorant and seeking answers. And so there really are bad questions. There's bad questions all over the Bible. There are questions that are born out of whining or frustration. You think about the disciples. They're on the sea and the storm arises. And Jesus is there sleeping on a pillow. And they're afraid and they awake him and say, teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? They're frustrated a little bit, grumbling about the situation. Or maybe Martha, in that popular story in Luke chapter 10. Do you not care that my sister has left me to serve alone? And of course, in that moment, Jesus puts her in her place and her way of thinking, that what is most important is sitting at his feet and listening to his words. She didn't think carefully about the question she was asking. Sometimes bad questions come because we're manipulating the situation. Remember, the Pharisees tried to do this frequently. Teacher, we know that you are true and that you teach the way of God and truth, nor do you care about anyone. You always say what's true and you always say what's right. So tell us, is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not? Or when they brought that man in with the withered hand, they say, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath so that they could accuse him? Deceitfulness, manipulation, or even the father of lies. Did God actually say, you shall not eat of any tree in the garden? You see how his question is manipulating. It is deceiving. It's twisting, even in the question itself, the words of God and the interaction between God and Adam and Eve. And Eve, even though she recognizes that and she picks up on it and she answers correctly, she then is still deceived by the devil. So bad questions can have destructive force. They can lead our minds in the wrong direction. And that's why the preacher says in Ecclesiastes, we need to think about this. Think about what we should not say. Do not say, why were the former days better than these? Why is this such a bad question? Why is it that it's so foolish to allow our minds to think about this idea that the former days are better. Let me just give you a little context in Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and for the whole book in general. The preacher is talking about living in wisdom. Specifically in chapter 7, he's talking about some things that are better than others. And so a good name is better than precious ointment in the day of death than the day of birth. The end of a thing is better than the beginning. And so he's setting up these kind of dichotomies. You have one thing that is better than another. And what he wants them to understand is the former days are not better than the present. The present is where you are right now. And we'll talk some more about why this is such a foolish question, why it's a bad question. And he's changing gears a little bit here in how he's addressing these various objects that he's talking about here. He talks about the house of mourning and the house of feasting, these two different ideas. And it's a little bit more difficult when we talk about the past and the present and the future. They aren't so distinct. Even in the present, we can think fondly on the past, and I don't think he's speaking against that. Thinking about the past can be a very good thing. The problem here is not that someone is learning from the past or someone's appreciating the joys of the past. Maybe you're a little bit older and sometimes you think fondly of when your children were young and you remember those days and you think about how good those days were and that makes you smile. That's not what the wise man's talking about here. He's not saying, don't think about that. Don't think about those good days. He's coming at this from a very different perspective. Dwelling on or longing on those days gone by and how wonderful you imagine they were and how good they were. And you look at things now and you think, man, I wish I could go back to those days that were so much better. The former days can be corrective. They can be motivating. And the Hebrew writer says as much, but recall the former days, he says, when after you were enlightened, you endured a hard struggle with suffering. He's trying to build them up, to bolster them in their faith. But that's very different than thinking about how good things used to be and dwelling on that and thinking about how terrible then is the present. And so let's talk about why this is such a foolish question. The wise man, as wisdom literature does, really just offers practical wisdom. And so we have to let this kind of germinate in our mind and meditate on the thoughts that we find in wisdom literature and let our mind kind of dig into some of these thoughts and think about how they are borne out in our life in various ways. And so I'm going to give you a few simple suggestions, just nine. I'm going to build on Jeff's, no, just kidding. We're only going to have three tonight. 3 points on why this is a foolish question. And think about why the wise man, why the preacher, as he calls himself, would bring this to our attention as something that is something we shouldn't say, something that we shouldn't ask. And the first of those is extremely simple. It is the most basic reason why this is a bad question, and that is that they are the former days, and you can't return to them. No matter how badly you want to, no matter how great and wonderful they were, you can't go back. And so to desire this is a worthless, an empty, an impossible desire. The preacher would say that it is vanity and striving after wind. He likes to say that a lot if you read through Ecclesiastes, and that's exactly what it would be. It is just vain. It's empty. It's worthless. Trying to think about how we can go back to the past, it's not going to work no matter how badly we want to. It'll never happen. And what is actually happening here is we are struggling with the sin of discontentment. And I want to bring up a few passages from the book of Philippians because as I was encountering these texts in Ecclesiastes, it also made me think about a few texts in the epistle to the Philippian brethren written by the Apostle Paul. He tells them in Philippians 2 and verse 14 to do all things without grumbling or disputing. Without looking at our present circumstance and kind of murmuring and grumbling about it, that actually sounds a lot like what the Israelites did often, isn't it? Never quite happy with where they were. No matter what God had given them, no matter how God had blessed them, they're always thinking back to where? To how great it was in Egypt. And we'll come back to that thought. But they weren't going back to Egypt. And even if they did go back to Egypt, the situation would not be the same as when they left. There may be some things that would be similar, but things are not always going to be the same. When we try to go back and recreate a situation the way we had it before, it doesn't work that way. A little bit later in the letter, Paul says to the Philippians, I have learned in whatever situation I am to be content. I can be brought low. I can have much. He says, I can do all things through him who strengthens me. The context of that statement is about contentment. And what we're struggling with when we're making this statement in our mind, oh, how the former days were better than these, what we're really doing is we're struggling with discontentment in our life. Maybe we look at the church and we think 50 years ago, the church, it was just so much better back then. People were so much more committed. We sang better songs. We heard better sermons. We had better Bible classes. Well, whatever it may be that we were saying in our minds, the former days were better than these. It is not from wisdom, the wise man says. And we could apply this in all kinds of places in our life, but the same point stands. It's foolish to think this way. It will get us nowhere in life. It will solve no problems. All it does is feed discontentment. It makes us see the present situation we're in now and only think about how much better it was before and how things now aren't what they used to be, and maybe they never will be that way, and we're just loathing and lamenting the situation that we find ourselves in, which has some obvious consequences, one of those being that we aren't bettering the situation that we're in. We're in fact just making it worse. And so it's a foolish question because you can't go back. You can't return to the past. And then in combination with that, right hand in hand with this idea that you can't go back to the past is this next point. The reason it's a foolish question to think about the former days as being better than these and wishing you could go back is because it is not like you remember it. It just isn't. When I think about the past, if I were to actually be able to transplant myself back to the past, it would not be what I imagine in my mind. The former days are better in memory than in reality. That doesn't mean the former days weren't better. They might have been better. It may be that you've struggled. It may be that you have health crises or financial crises or family and relationship crises. It could be that things are in shambles now and really things were better in the past. But I will say this at least, that it's not what we remember. I remember when we were younger and we moved to Texas the first time back in 2004. We just graduated from college. We moved into Pasadena and we were there for a little while and I was working a lot and Katie hadn't found a job yet. And she really wanted to go back to Bowling Green because that's where we had lived before. And she had this longing to go back there, see her parents, also see all of our friends. And this is what she found. When she went back, it was not the same. We weren't the only ones who had moved on. A lot of our friends were gone. The circumstances were different. The church was different. And she enjoyed it. It wasn't that she didn't enjoy going back and seeing people, but I think that helped perspective a lot. When she came back, the perspective was very different. Things were not the same. Just because you returned to where you were doesn't mean everything's going to go back to the way it was. It won't. Those are the former days. You can't go back, remember? And the way we remember it is often not the reality of what it actually was. We minimize the struggles, especially when we are frustrated or angry. And if you look at the context of this statement in chapter 7 and verse 10, just before that in verse 9, be not quick in your spirit to become angry, for anger lodges in the heart of fools. Say not, why were the former days better than these? For it is not from wisdom that you ask this. And so when we are in these states of emotion, we imagine that things were so much better before. We don't like what's happening at the office or in our home, or wherever it may be, at school, with the teacher that we have now, whatever the circumstances in your life. And so we think back, we're angry, we're frustrated, and we think back and we imagine all the good times that we had before. Our last employer was so much better, even though we left them for some reason. That last teacher, they cared so much more about me. Whatever the circumstance is, because we're angry, we're frustrated, it just accentuates that feeling to long and desire the former days. And the wise man says that's foolish. You're not seeing for reality for what it is. You're allowing your emotions to accentuate things in your mind. That's what the preacher tells us. We imagine how great things used to be. But even more than that, we find all the problems with things now. Have you ever done that? I'm guilty of this. This is one of the reasons why when I read this passage, it stuck out to me. thinking about those things in the past and imagining how good things used to be. And we think about all the things that we had before, and in the process, we are thinking about how negative everything is now. People just aren't committed anymore, and people don't come to church anymore. They don't come to Bible class, and we come up with all these things about the church that are so much worse now than they used to be. I'll say this, that may be the case. Maybe it is that less people come to Bible class and less people come to Sunday night worship or whatever other scenario we've concocted in our mind to be negative about. But I also say this, for a long time, people have done that. And so we notice these things in the present. And when our mind is focused on the past, we accentuate the negative. We accentuate the positive of the past while at the same time finding all the problems with the present. And maybe that we do that in our marriage. We look back those early days. We think about how wonderful they were and how carefree. And of course, we forget the times we couldn't pay the bills, and we didn't go to the doctor because we didn't have any money, and we didn't have any insurance. And we forget all the negative things, and we think about all the positives. And at the same time, we think about how difficult things are now, and how it's a struggle, and how can things be the way they are. And what the wise man says is you need perspective. It is not wise to think this way. It sends us down this path that is false, that it is not truth, it is not reality. We think of all the wonderful things of the past, we ignore the negatives, and we think of all the problems in the present, and we ignore the blessings. One of the struggles of the preacher in the book, if you've read recently, you will note this, is just the monotony of life. He looks at life under the sun, and just everything's the same. Just one day after another, it all looks the same. The same things happen to everybody, whether they're wicked or whether they're righteous. And he looks at this and he says, it's just not fair. Right? That's that dwelling on the past, dwelling on things the way they used to be. It's just not fair the way things have turned out. And what corrects the preacher's thinking is this reality of the presence of God and what that actually means as he nears the end of the book. But when he looks at life as just life under the sun, things are bleak, they're grim. You read that first chapter, and that's not going to make butterflies come out of your heart, and you're not going to think of unicorns and all kinds of happy thoughts. This is very negative stuff in chapter 1. It's just one day after another, vanities of vanities. You see, this is new. It's already been in the ages before. Nothing you see is anything new. It's all the same. It doesn't get a whole lot better. I search for wisdom. And I search for pleasure, and what he finds is none of any of it. That's his experience of life under the sun from the perspective of life just on earth. Without the thought or without the consideration of God, it is depressing and it is sad and it is dark. And so what our minds do when we're only thinking on the earthly things is we look back at those things in the past that we liked and that were pleasurable, and we emphasize those so that we can emphasize the negatives now and say, life isn't fair. Preacher says, that's a bad question to ask. Why were the former days better than these? It's foolish. We can't go back. And it's not what we remember. And what he finally realizes is that when we look at life under the sun and there's no purpose, it is very grim, but when there is purpose, when there is a purpose to life, to serve God, and to give our life to him, there actually is relevance to what's happening here. It's not just pointless and arbitrary or even cruel, as sometimes he pictures it as being when we're looking only from an earthly perspective. But there's so much more to what we have here. Here's the third reason why it's foolish. I just went back, but that's not what we're talking about. When we ask this question in Ecclesiastes 7, why were the former days better than these? When our minds are focused on the past, what it really does, as we've kind of indicated all along, is it's really blinding us to the blessings of the present and even the future. It blinds us to the things that we do have And what the wise man, what the preacher wants us to understand is we need to live in the moment with an eye to the future. That's what we really need to be doing in life, not dwelling on the past and longing for the past, but we live in the moment that we have. It is not from wisdom that you ask this when you're dwelling on the past. No, live in the moment. Consider the work of God. Who can make straight what he has made crooked, as Jeff talked about last week from Psalm 131. There's just things that are not in our department, things that we're not going to know. That's God's business. It's not mine. When God makes something crooked, it's crooked. When he makes it straight, it's straight. I can't change that. That's not what I'm here to do. What I'm here to do, and he makes very clear, is to live the life that God has blessed me with in these short amount of days under the sun. To rejoice in what God has given me. To take joy in the things that I have. Notice Ecclesiastes 5, 18 through 20. A text that's leading us into this section in chapter 7. He says, "Behold, what I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil which one toils under the sun, the few days of his life that God has given him. For this is his lot. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil, this is the gift of God." I want you to notice this last verse. "For he will not much remember the days of his life, because God keeps him occupied with the joy in his heart." This is what he's saying. Find the joy in right now. Find the joy in the present, and you don't have to think about all the joys in the past to make yourself happy. You'll be occupied with the joy that's in your heart right now. Stop asking this question about the former days being better and looking back and thinking it was so much better then. Occupy yourself with what you have right now. Enjoy what God has blessed you with. That's what the preacher's telling us. You think about all that, and you eat and you drink and be merry, and you enjoy the lot that God has given you in this life, and you'll be so occupied with that that you'll not remember the days of your life. You won't be so focused on all the things that happened before and how much better they were than what you have now. You'll be focused on the present and be focused on what's coming in the future, the blessings that are now in our life and the blessings that will come as we continue to live and journey in faith. In other words, it's a decision. It's a choice. It's a decision to live with a commitment to find joy in our lot in life, whatever that lot in life may be. And there may be a lot of struggle. There may be a lot of trial and difficulty in the lot in life that we have. That first section, he didn't talk to people that had possessions and power. That was to everyone. And then he made a note, those who have possessions and power, enjoy those too, the short time you have them. That's your lot in life. Occupy your heart and your mind with the blessings that now are, rather than thinking about what used to be and how negative things have become. When the wise man thinks about the world around him, and when he's observant, he uses the word wisdom in chapter 1, but I think that's just kind of earthly wisdom. It brings vexation. It brings sorrow. It says, "I apply my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is but striving after wind. For much wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow." And then he talks about all the things he tried to do. All the earthly experiences and all the earthly wisdom he tried to experience in life to find satisfaction, to find joy, and to find peace. But the more he tried to understand, the more he was left without answers. And so as we try to understand life, the best understanding we're going to have is realizing that some things are God's to know and they are not mine. And being satisfied, being content with the lot that I have, finding the joy in the things that I have, rather than trying to search for all the things I've missed or all the things that I can regain somehow, just appreciating what God has given to me. This is his gift, it tells us. It actually says it again in chapter 3, in that section, probably the most popular section in the book of Ecclesiastes. There's a time for everything and runs through all those different times. He says, "What gain has the worker from his toil?" In verse 9, "I have seen the business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. He has made everything beautiful in its time. Jeff talked about that a little bit this morning, didn't he? Some of the problem with some of this is we want things in our time. And when things aren't working out the way we want them to work out, then we begin thinking about the past and how great things were before because they aren't working out now. But he makes all things beautiful in its time. We give time to God. Also, he has put eternity into man's heart, yet so that he cannot find out what God has done from the beginning to end. And I perceive that there is nothing better for them than to be joyful and to do good as long as they live. Also that everyone should eat and drink and take pleasure in all his toil. This is God's gift to man. A few days ago, someone on their Facebook page put a post and said, "What are you thankful for?" And various people had put different things. For whatever reason, I don't know if it's allergies or this Sahara Desert thing people keep talking about dirt flying in. I don't know, but my eyes have been bothering me a lot lately. Put my contacts in, and they're kind of scratchy and uncomfortable. But even in the midst of that, as I was thinking about this, I thought, I'm so thankful for my eyes. I'm so thankful for glasses and contacts. Have you ever thought about that? My life would be so much more difficult if I didn't have that in my life. If I no longer had contacts, no longer had glasses, the world would be very fuzzy for me. And sometimes we don't stop and think about just those simple things. They seem simple to us. I can't even begin to think about the hours and the work that went into whoever developed any of these technologies. But what a blessing it is that I can wake up in the morning and pop some stuff in my eyes, and now I can see the world in 20/20 vision or even better. And it would affect everything. I mean, there's so many things in my life that it would affect if I didn't have that ability. I would have trouble reading. I would have a lot of trouble. I thought about this as I was answering the question. I'd have a lot of trouble doing my job. Just reading the Bible would be difficult. I'd have to sit there with a book like this close to me, and that would not be very comfortable. Looking at the screen and trying to do stuff on the computer screen or write things down. The things that I enjoy in life. Just the hobbies that I do. Playing golf. It's pretty hard to play golf when you can't see the green, and you can't see the fairway, and you can't see the ball down there. There's all kinds of playing baseball. I did that growing up. Not being able to see a pitch come in or throw it to somebody. There's all these things that are affected just by this one little simple thing. Seeing our children's faces from a distance when they light up and they're enjoying things. Just from this one little simple thing, we can find the blessings if we're committed to looking for them. We can see the gifts of God that he has blessed us with in our lot in life, in this small period of time that we live here, if that's our decision, if that's what we really want to do. And what the wise man, what the preacher tells us is, what is foolish, what is bad, and I hazard to say, but it's true, what is stupid, is looking to the past with longing and desire. And saying, the former days, were they not better? This is the day the Lord has made. Rejoice and be glad in it. It may be that you need to do that this evening. It could be that you've been living in darkness in your life, focused so much on all the problems and the difficulties that you have had, thinking about the negativity and how life isn't fair and how things could be so much better. I want to encourage you tonight to stop doing that. To join the rest of us who are motivated to think about the present and look to the future, to live in the present with an eye to the future, thinking about how wonderful and how glorified life is going to be in eternity with God the Father. And let that be our focus. Set our mind on things above, not on things of the earth. That's another way to say it from Colossians chapter 3. And if you see yourself in that place now, don't stay in that darkness. Don't stay in that valley. Make a decision to come out of that and reach out to those who can help you do that. And begin to live a life without the negativity, without the focus on all the things in the past that seemed like they were so great, the imagination that you've created in your mind that life was so much better then than it is now. Stop that. And decide you're going to live for God today. And if you've done that already, and you see it's just not happening in your life, you've stepped away, you've walked off the narrow path, you can come back. He wants all of us to come to repentance. He doesn't want any of us to perish. If you need help, why don't you come now as we stand and we sing together.